Welcome to another edition of The Brand Called You. Today I have someone who spent many, many years in the corporate world and has become an entrepreneur. Amar Singh, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Amar is the founder and CEO of Clove Dental. He's an MBA from Harvard Business School. He's a mechanical engineer. And he's had a fairly impressive record with companies like P&G, Warner Lambert, Bain, and SAP. Amar, tell me a little bit about your early career.
All right, so I did my undergrad in Africa and then moved to Canada for my master's. Mm-hmm. And right after master's, Procter & Gamble came on campus, and an impressive company, as you know, with a rich history of training good Correct. Managers and leaders. So I joined them, mm-hmm. Worked with them for a number of years in their logistics and transportation warehousing sector. So not on the typical brand side, yep. but more on the delivery side. And because my master's was in operations research, so it sort of fit in my yeah. profile. Mm-hmm. Then after doing that about 3 or 4 years, I then moved to a company called Warner Lambert, which now is owned by Pfizer.
Sure.
So there we were in consumer healthcare space, products like Neosporin, Polysporin, mm-hmm. Lubriderm, Listerine. Mm-hmm. So we were working on those products and bringing them to the market. And then I decided, like a typical Indian engineer who gets convinced that MBA is a good thing for you. Mm-hmm. So my parents and my family kept, saying, hey, maybe you should think of MBA. Mm-hmm. So I figured that if I get into a good school, then I'll do it because I already had a master's.
Correct.
And I think, Harvard made the mistake of accepting me. So Correct. So I then I was lucky enough to go there from 96 to 98. Mm-hmm. And it was a great experience. And as you can imagine, it's transformative in many ways. You meet an impressive group of people. Although I have to say that a lot of my friends thought that after Harvard, I had changed. Mm-hmm. But I think reality is the perception of me had changed mm-hmm. more than I had changed.
Okay.
Then I ended up working for a software company in Dallas, which was in supply chain technology space. So I wanted to, at the time of MBA, I wanted to take a sort of a pivot my career a little bit mm-hmm. and move from operations, if you will, into technology. Because okay. in those days, 98, technology
was very tough.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's how I ended up shifting to a company called I2 Technologies mm-hmm. out of Dallas, mm-hmm. spent a year with them, and then I got my entrepreneurial bug, which we'll talk
Wonderful.
About.
But, So, after such a successful professional career with some of the biggest companies, what made you become an entrepreneur? And, right. and the reason I'm asking you this is because the thousands of people who listen to and us and watch us, there are a lot of people who want to make this transition.
Right. I think for me, it was more of a desire to, I get a kick out of doing new things.
Okay.
I get a kick out of trying to create and design new things. So if you were inherently, you have a designing bend, if you will, then typically when you're working for corporates, by and large, a large part of the processes are fairly standardized.
Okay.
Of course, there's improvements to be made and mm-hmm. changes to be made, but usually when an organization is well established, those processes are well established. You're making micro changes. You're not. It's very rare for you to make transformational changes Correct. On those processes.
Correct.
So, and if you get a kick out of doing those kinds of things, then you get bored mm. doing the everyday corporate work. Mm. So I guess it was boredom that led me to think about entrepreneurial journey.
Okay.
The second factor I would say is that in those years, 98, 99, the dot-com internet boom was happening. Mm. And it was sort of, my analogy was that, if everybody's playing this game and winning medals, and I'm sitting on the side watching them play the game. So my analogy was, hey, Yada, to win a medal, you have to be in the field to play the game.
Correct.
So I got into playing the game.
Wonderful.
Right.
So let's talk about Clove Dental.
Sure.
When you decided to get into this space, what was the gap you spotted? Because every colony seems to have a dentist.
Right. Well, so let me step back a little bit on terms of my transformation coming back to India. So
okay.
about 8 years ago, I made a decision to move back to India, which mm-hmm. was after 30 years. And so the thought was, all right, I'm going to, and the reason to move back was mostly family, mm-hmm. parents, my wife's parents, children, grandparents, and all that typical sort of mid-career reflection
Most,
point.
Yeah. yeah.
And so when I looked at coming to India, I thought if I want to do a business here, and if I can find an opportunity that would have some social impact, mm-hmm. while still be a for-profit business. So I'm definitely, I believe that for-profit businesses can innovate faster often than perhaps non-profit businesses. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to take that away from them, but just generally my opinion. And so I chose to look at healthcare and education. Mm-hmm. Those are my two verticals. I also had energy, but really focused on those two. Mm-hmm. And rejected education for a number of reasons, and then looked at healthcare. And I looked around. Dental wasn't necessarily on the top of my list. Mm-hmm. There are many other fields of medical, you know, diabetic care, renal care, IVF, diagnostics, so on and so forth. And I realized that all of them were controlled. You know, it's more of a B2B business where your patient goes to a physician who then refers them to those practices. Mm-hmm. So you're building a brand with the physicians.
Correct.
And building a brand with the physicians, it's much harder because you have to bring a lot more to the table for you to you know, penetrate the intellect of the doctors.
Correct.
Whereas when it comes to dentistry is a direct-to-consumer business, mm-hmm. where actually you educate the consumers, you raise the awareness, and consumers come directly to a dentist. Mm-hmm. So therefore, your interaction is to consumers. So it was sort of more of a B2C business mm-hmm. rather than a B2B business. So that was the one attraction point of dentistry. Mm-hmm. And typically, like any other B2C businesses, you know, a brand, any consumer businesses, a room for brand is much higher than a room than a B2B business, typically.
And hence came Clove.
Hence came Clove. Yeah. So that's sort of the thought process. And the gap really was that, you know, it is one of those dentistry is or dental disease is the most widespread disease in the country.
Okay.
You know, nearly 90% of Indians have some kind of dental disease. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not a life-threatening one. Mm-hmm. Therefore, we often tend to ignore it, but it is the most common. You know, I can guarantee you that I wish you never see any doctor, but I unfortunately will tell you, you will see a dentist for sure. So therefore, every individual will need to have a dentist. And therefore, the second thing is in dentistry, there is a fair bit of capital equipment and capital expenses required.
Correct.
And there are no loans available. There's no way to finance it. So for dentists who are coming out over the last many decades, have had no opportunity to deploy the right amount of infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they're sub-optimized. Okay. So therefore, the quality of the services, you know, doesn't quite match up with the capabilities of the world today.
Mm-hmm.
So we are bringing the latest technology. And so our value add really is to be able to bring capital, bring the technology, and then really allow the dentist mm-hmm. to do their job that they do so well.
Okay. So my next question, Amar, is that, you know, Indians have typically gone to a dentist when they've got a toothache or they've got a problem. And yet there is a very large cosmetics element of, you know, dentistry as well. Is the Indian market changing?
Well, I would, you know, I'm recently going through a personal family situation where we're having a family member going through a cardiac procedure. Mm-hmm. So I would say that Indians for decades never worried about their heart
Correct.
Until they had a problem.
Correct.
Right. Now, over the years, we have a lot more education awareness and people are more worried about what they eat, mm-hmm. you know, cholesterol,
yeah.
they get their checks done.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, Indians are changing. Indians have changed in many other walks of medical science. Mm-hmm. And therefore, Indians are also, dentistry is just another, you know, another leg of our health
mm-hmm.
and another aspect of our health. And so, yes, the Indians are we are changing. Mm-hmm. And particularly, I would say, the younger generation mm-hmm. because they are much more connected. They are, you know,
Correct.
On Facebook,
Correct.
Twitter and social media. They are listening from each other. They're hearing. So they're much more aware than perhaps, you know, my parents were or even I was at their age.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, the sense of awareness is increasing. And once that awareness increases, obviously, their desire to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, you know, your mouth is pretty much your gateway to your entire body.
Correct.
Right. So everything that goes into your body usually goes from your nose and your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So and therefore, you it is your entry point. And if you can look after, you know, your entry point carefully,
Correct.
Then you have a much better chance of the rest of the body. So I think there's a huge amount of change happening already.
Very interesting. So, you know, you spoke about young people. So I'm going to move to another question, which would have come later. How are millennials changing your business?
Well, in many ways. I think one is that they are asking for and they understand quality.
Correct.
They understand, you know, hygiene, sterilization. They know that, you know, in dental, you're dealing with blood and saliva. So your instruments that the dentist is using better be very sterilized.
Correct.
And unfortunately, that may not be the case everywhere. So they're much more aware. Number two is they're much more conscious about their appearances. They're much more because they are, you know, taking selfies. They're doing all sorts of, you know, stuff that we never did when we were their age. And so there's definitely a need for the awareness is increasing. And then I think the thirdly is that they are much more willing to spend. You know, they're working. You know, oftentimes you have now both, you know, young men and women working equally, so they have dual income households, so they have enough free cash flow at home, or, you know, a disposable income, as we would call it. And they are looking to make sure that they are looking after their looks, they're looking after their health. So therefore, whereas our parents, you know, and us, we probably would try and deflect the problem because our priorities were different. And we probably didn't have enough disposable income, you know, to focus on these things. So unless it hurt, we probably wouldn't take action. But today, the younger generation, so, you know, we have people 20 years old, 30 years old coming and getting their teeth fixed, getting braces. You know, of course, we have invisible braces these days where, you know, in fact, we have our own product called Invisi Braces, which is an invisible brace where you put it on, nobody would know that you have a brace on. It's clear plastic, essentially. So while you're correcting your problem, but you're not, you know, you're not making into a social awkward situation. So we're getting a lot of younger people saying, hey, I didn't fix my teeth when I was in my early teens, but can I do it now? So there's a lot of change happening for the positive.
Wonderful. Yeah. And Amar, you know, you mentioned that a little while ago that a very large percentage of Indians have problems in their teeth.
Yes.
What would be some of the common problems that someone should watch out for?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'll qualify that I'm not a dentist. Therefore, my advice is going to be limited from an individual and mental perspective.
Yeah.
So if you think about, you know, the problems begin with the bacteria in the mouth. And bacteria, of course, comes to us because we eat food and particles of food and get stuck in your teeth. Mm. When they get stuck in your teeth, and overnight, of course, like anything else, they will decay, they'll ferment, and they'll cause, and these are microscopic level organisms. So you have bacteria, and if unchecked, and, you know, brushing alone doesn't solve the problem because you're not reaching. Brushing, by the way, just for your trivia, 65% of the tooth surface, is covered by brushing.
Okay.
35% is not.
Wow.
Unless you do flossing, because a lot of your surface is in between on the side. So therefore, a lot of people don't do flossing, which means the bacteria stays. And then over time, it forms from being decayed into a disease. From there, it becomes a decay. So the first problem that people have typically is gum disease and bacteria in their mouth, which then leads to cavities, which they sometimes don't realize or ignore. You know, they'll go out and take, at-home remedies. And that then doesn't solve the problem. It only masking it. Then the problem graduates into a deeper roots. It goes into your dental roots, and now you end up with the root canal.
Yeah.
So, and then you end up with extractions. You know, so there's a huge progression. It starts from the bacteria, and it goes all the way to extraction. You know, one thing I also realized that we should never lose any of our teeth. You know, tooth is part of our body. Even at our older age, there's no reason for us to lose any tooth. Whereas people, you know, often think that it's acceptable.
Yeah.
So it's changing.
Yeah.
So I think.
And my last question on clove before I move to the next segment. Is cosmetic dental surgery really coming in a big way?
See, I think cosmetic dental surgery is sort of a misnomer in my viewpoint, right? Most of the dental treatments have a primary objective of fixing your functional issue, right? So when they're talking about braces, oftentimes people say braces is for cosmetic reasons. Yes. But really, the braces help you align your teeth. Therefore, you chew better. Therefore, you actually have less room for bacteria to grow. So there's a lot of medical, your gums are not being mistreated. So there is a medical reason for you to actually correct your teeth. Now, the cosmetic aspect is an auxiliary benefit. It's a secondary benefit. Of course, from a consumer's perspective, that might sometimes be the more critical factor. Therefore, a lot of dentists, you know, use the conversation that, hey, if I can convince you to get your street straightened for medical reasons, let me try and convince you from beauty and look perspective.
Okay.
So therefore, they label them as cosmetic treatments.
Okay.
So the answer is yes, cosmetic treatments are growing, but we at Clove, we focus them from a perspective of, you know, corrective procedures,
yeah,
which have cosmetic benefits,
and
rather than cosmetic procedures that have corrective. So it's just a matter of how we think about it.
Well, that's a very interesting perspective.
Yeah.
So let's move to your learnings as a startup entrepreneur. And I'm sure there'll be lots of learnings that you have. So my first question to you is that should a startup entrepreneur go solo or should they have a partner?
All right. I think that's it's a very generic question.
Yep.
And I think every situation is different, first of all. Now, that being said, I've had the pleasure of working with partners and I've had the pleasure of working alone. I think the fundamental factor, if I take it one level up, is that you need to understand what your capabilities are as an entrepreneur, what your strengths are, and how do you actually cover for your weaknesses, areas that you don't have. So if you, and it depends on, early in my career, I had to find individuals who would come in as partners because I didn't have credibility per se.
Correct.
I was starting out.
Correct.
So therefore I had to bring people with, you know, with similar skill set, mm-hmm, and therefore I formed partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
Later in my career, I was able to attract senior talent, people who knew my history and credibility, mm-hmm, and therefore today my board is filled with very experienced entrepreneurs and executives who have worked globally,
mm-hmm,
and like Scott Payman, who ran GE,
yeah,
for India. So I have individuals like that. Therefore, what that does is it allows me to fill my weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on where you are, what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, and how you want to fill those weaknesses.
Okay.
So I think it's less to do with solo or partnership, mm-hmm, is to do with what your strengths are and how do you complement for your weaknesses.
Wonderful. So tell me, based on your own learnings, and I'm sure you've met lots of startup entrepreneurs, what are some of the basic mistakes a lot of startup entrepreneurs make?
I think we touched on the first one, which is that when you come up with the idea, you are almost, when you're working as an entrepreneur, you're in love, and you have to literally be in love with something. And when you're in love with something, whether it happens to be a personal, social life, or in business, you oftentimes you put blinders on logic because you're emotional, you're passionate about this idea. So oftentimes entrepreneurs are so ingrained with their idea and the love that they actually stop seeing the challenges and weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing is, yes, you need to be in love. Yes, you need to have that passion.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you have to consciously, be able to stop,
mm-hmm,
and be able to think from a logical perspective as to where you are. Where are the gaps and what are you not seeing? Where do you have the blinders on?
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you can then quickly find help or find corrective solutions for that. Otherwise, sometimes you go on too long and you realize that it probably wasn't the right thing or you didn't account for some obvious challenges,
mm-hmm,
in your, passion.
Okay.
So that would be the first thing I would say, mm-hmm, in my opinion.
Okay. So my next question is on scaling up. I mean, you are scaling up Clove fairly quickly. At what stage should an entrepreneur decide to start scaling up?
Right. So I think if you look at the entrepreneurial journey of any particular venture, you have to first come up with the idea. So that's the first step. You think about what problem you're trying to solve.
Mm-hmm.
You have to understand the problem very deeply.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to understand the solutions that you might bring forward. Then you have to do a test market, or let's call it an example or,
mm-hmm,
a test.
Mm-hmm.
You actually do it in a small setting. For us, it was one or two clinics. You try to figure out, okay, what do we want to do? So you then learn and you iterate, if you will. You change your problem, you change your solutions, you continue to iterate until you have figured out a reasonably well-functioning solution,
okay,
to that problem that you're trying to solve.
Mm-hmm.
Once you figure that out, the step three for me then is you actually start to put some standard operating procedures,
correct,
some templates around some of those key functional areas, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, if it's recruiting, whether for us it was about how does a clinic get designed, mm-hmm. What kind of doctors do we want to hire, what kind of dental assistant do we need, mm-hmm. what kind of a look and feel of the clinic, mm-hmm. what equipment do we want. So there's a lot of, you know, elements of your design that you put in, and you early and you realize that this equipment doesn't work in this setting, mm-hmm. or this type of a doctor doesn't work for us, you know. So there are iterations that you do. Once you figure it out, then you actually start to put certain templates and standard operating procedures that will allow you to replicate them without too much variation.
Okay.
Because as you scale, variability is the one that actually causes you grief.
Okay.
If you can have, if you look at any large group, you look at Starbucks, you look at any, you know, as an example, McDonald's, you can look at any, you know, sure. Large centers, they all have a large number of consistent processes.
Okay.
Because you know there'll be enough local nuances and local problems, so you want to be solving those local problems, mm-hmm. rather than trying to solve your structural problems. So you actually templatize your structures. Once you've done that, then you have room to scale. And what we did was we did that. We went from one clinic to about 60 clinics, and then we stopped.
Okay.
Then we took about a year's worth of break to again go back and relook and say, okay, whatever worked for us in 1 or 10 or 15 clinics, mm-hmm. is it working for us in 60 clinics?
Mm-hmm.
We modified our processes, and then we grew from 60 all the way to about 330 or 340, and then we have stopped in the last, you know, 4 or 5 months, and we're doing a similar, you know, kind of a resetting exercise right now. And, you know, in this calendar year, we're going to again add another 100 clinics.
Wow.
So therefore we are, you know, the ability for us to start, ideate, get it right,
mm-hmm.
templatize it, grow,
mm-hmm.
then stop, re-ideate, templatize, grow.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of a pattern is what we have found to be. So I think it varies by industry, varies by, if you grow too fast,
mm-hmm.
You can compromise on quality.
Mm-hmm.
If you grow too quickly, you can compromise on your business model.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a balancing act that entrepreneurs,
mm-hmm.
and if you have good people around you,
yeah.
if you have good, mentors and management team, then you're more likely to, and if you're a good listener,
mm-hmm.
you're more likely to be able to get those inputs and move to the next level.
Terrific. So I've got time for a few questions for you,
sure.
personally.
Mm-hmm.
My first question is that after a successful corporate career, a great business that you're building, I didn't realize you had 300 plus locations already. My question is that, have you had any people who've had an influence on you in your life? And if yes, what have you learned from them?
Wow. I would say that I have a large number of people that have, I've been fortunate to, who have influenced me. Of course, you know, you begin with your early part of your life, you begin with your parents,
Perfect.
Your family, you know,
Perfect.
So I have a set of parents, I have a set of godparents. So, you know, both those set of parents have influenced my, development.
Mm-hmm.
Then as you move along, you have your partner. So my family, my partner, my wife, you know, there's influence there that comes in on a different level, you know, whether when you're unsure, when you're insecure. And as I was talking to someone yesterday, that I was interviewing a candidate yesterday, and I told him that the more intelligent and more entrepreneurial and more capable you are, the more insecure you get when things are not going so well.
Correct.
So it's sort of it comes with the territory.
Correct.
The more ambitious you are, the more insecure you will get when your things are not going well. So when you have those downturns, having a group of your well-wishers, your spouse, your parents, your family influence a lot, because they give you the right amount of, you know, temperament or balancing act that allows you to rebound, right? So that's an influence that comes. And then when it comes to professional life, I think if you realize that you need to learn a lot from different people.
Mm-hmm.
So in my first startup, I had a gentleman named Lamar Alexander,
okay.
Who is the senator of the United States. He was the governor of Tennessee and a United States Secretary of Education, because my first venture was in education space. So there were a bunch of things I learned from him. He was much more senior to me and much more experienced. So there was a lot of learning. And one of the examples I'll give you is that he mentioned to me that when you go to a meeting, any meeting, particularly with your managers, do not go in with a surprise,
mm-hmm.
because even if your allies in the room may surprise you
mm-hmm.
Differently with a surprise. So always go in, particularly with a new concept, you always, so there are always good advice that you get from different people. Now, in this particular venture, I have my dear friend, Louis Shakanovsky, who's our chairman. I've known him for 20 years. And, you know, he's a very, very accomplished business leader globally. I worked for a company that did 4,000 locations in 35 countries, a company called Belron. He was the head of M&A and legal. And he ran that, you know, he's part of that business, and he did over 814 acquisitions in his 35, 40 years of career in that company. And so he has a lot of, you know, wisdom. So he acts as my mentor in the current venture. So I think surrounding yourself with your loved ones and your people who care for you at a professional level and listening to the advice, engaging with them, sharing your problems, sharing your insecurities. Oftentimes, you know, entrepreneurs want to be, you know, they're afraid of sharing their, you know, weaknesses. And so if you, the sooner you learn to share, the sooner you'll start to get the input from others.
Very true. Make yourself vulnerable.
Yes.
And absolutely. You will get good advice.
Wonderful.
So I have time for two more questions. First question is, what would be three words that define Amar?
I would say curiosity, number one, passion, number two, and I would say perseverance.
Okay.
Just continuing to go at it and keep doing it and chip away every day and, you know, go back. And the more you do, the better you get. So, yeah.
Wonderful. So, Amar, my last question to you is on failure. You know, one of the reasons I ask this question from all my guests is that in our country, in particular, and maybe Asia in general, we don't teach our children that it's okay to fail.
Yeah.
And yet we fail all the time. Okay. So my question to you is, what have been some of your learnings from some of your failures?
Right. So I would begin by saying that I think it is true. You know, in India, we I think that's probably true in other parts of the world as well, because our love for our children and our desire to make sure that they don't have any troubles because of love, we tend to shield them too much, and I'm guilty of that as well. But as we grow older and we come to the real world, we realize the real world isn't, you know, where your parents or your loved ones are going to cover for you all the time. So therefore, ability to learn and ability to fail and learn from it is actually absolutely a critical skill.
Okay.
And in fact, I would say that it's when you fail is when you learn. Why? Because when you're successful, you're so consumed with your success. Yes, you're doing some things right, but you don't have the time to dissect it, because you're growing and you're learning and you're successful. So you celebrate your successes, but you don't dissect the reasons why you're successful. Whereas when you fail, you don't celebrate failures, obviously. So you but you hopefully dissect the reasons why you failed. And when you start to dissect what happened, you start to identify problems. Once you start to identify problems, you automatically start to come up with your solutions that how you will change, how you could do differently. So therefore, failures are the ones when you learn the most. So I would say for me, I have recognized that perhaps that it is A, that I fail all the time, and I fail every day on many aspects, and B, to develop an attitude, a learning mindset, that thereby I'm dissecting the reasons why something didn't work. And I'm not doing this on a piece of paper, or, you know, it's more of a subconscious and a reflective level, that you dissect what happened, what didn't go well, and you try and improve on it. So my learnings have come on many, many aspects, both at a personal level, you know, when it comes to raising my children, dealing with my, you know, in my family, being a good husband, you know, being a good employer, being a good employee, being a good director, being a good shareholder. So there are a lot of roles that I play, and in every role I fail on a constant basis, but I learn from it.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Amar, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. And I wish Globe Dental lots of success.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for the Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.